This is SB Nation Radio.
Great moments are born from great opportunity.
The next generation of sports radio. This is the Tony D Show.
Guys, I'm bringing the party to you.
Live from the Quicken Loans Studios in New Jersey.
Quicken Loans. Take advantage of historic low rates. Go to Rocket Mortgage today.
Here's Tony Desiri.
All right, glad you've been with us here on SB Nation Radio. And happy Thanksgiving to you as we get ready for a nice holiday. Jurgen Klinsmann was fired from the United States men's soccer team. I'll admit I am not as aware of the circumstances behind it, what it means, but I am really curious about soccer in this country and where the national team is going. Glenn Davis joins us. He hosts Soccer Matters in Houston on ESPN 97.5. He's a player, he's a soccer analyst, and he joins us to help break this all down. How are you, Glenn?
Tony D, thank you very much. Hello to the Garden State on a Thanksgiving week.
Appreciate it. Thank you so much. Let me get right to it. When I heard this news, I was like, "Oh, okay. I don't know the measure of what he is judged by." So, is this the right decision for the United States men's soccer team?
Yeah, I think it is now. It's been 5 years. There were a lot of promises from Jurgen Klinsmann, who, you know, by the way, everybody knows was an unbelievable player, had an unbelievable career. Came in with a lot of big vision to try and revamp and change the game in this country, especially how we looked at it. And I don't think a lot of it came to fruition. There was a lack of clarity, I think, from the players at times, some up and down results. But I think the real capper here is the fact that you lost the first two games in the hexagonal, which is, you know, this final tournament here to go to the World Cup in Russia. And there were some strange things he did from the perspective of differing systems and job definition for players in games. So it all kind of came to a head. He began to kind of act a little bit strange in the media. And you got the sense that something had to be done here at this point. So, look, the good news is there was a lot of healthy pressure from the media in America, and I think that means we're growing up in the world of soccer. I think it means we're becoming more mature as a soccer country, but I think the decision was the correct one.
Yeah, I kind of equated it to a college football program that doesn't have a lot of expectations and then gets a little success, and then the expectations change. Did that happen to Jurgen Klinsmann? Did the United States grow enough to say, you know what? We now expect a certain level, and you got to start delivering it to us.
Yeah, that's a really good question. I think it's going to be conditioned in many different ways by many different people. Everybody's got a different take on this whole thing. Look, I think what he came to do, and probably his biggest gift to U.S. soccer, and I will also say that I think when he was hired, I was all for it because I think we needed something different. We needed a guy that won a World Cup to have a crack at maybe changing the way we look at the sport in this country. So I don't think it was a bad hire. It ends up being a bad hire because he gets fired, but generally every national team coach does at one point. I think it's stagnated. I think it's treading water now. I think some of the obscure decisions he made made people think twice about what was going on. But his biggest gift, I think, is going to be that in his urging players to take more risk, to play in Europe, to put themselves in difficult situations, I think what he also did was he fired the media up in this country to a point now, and we do have more soccer coverage with the internet and social media, but I think he fired people up to think, look, let's start holding coaches in this country, and not only at the national team level, but in Major League Soccer, to the fire a little bit more. And that healthy pressure, in turn, helps everybody who runs a professional soccer team, helps players, helps coaches. So I think that's the biggest gift that Jurgen Klinsmann is going to leave.
Let's go back to the 2014 World Cup, and it's one thing to say, look, we're going to put the best team we possibly could put together, and I run this, and no questions asked. But there is also sponsors to consider. There's also identification. It's also relatability from the fans. So not bringing Landon Donovan to Brazil, did that come back to bite him, or was that accepted at the time that he made that decision?
Yeah, it depends on who you talk to, but for me, that was not a – I just don't know how you bring that player. It had to be something personal. Landon Donovan there, you get more possession, you get more of the ball, you get more good decisions. The man's probably the best soccer player, arguably, we've ever produced. And, you know, if you look at the way the World Cup went and you compare it to the prior one in South Africa under Bob Bradley, we go to these World Cups, we have this tremendous cavalier spirit, and we fight like animals, and we get a lot of respect for that. But very rarely do we in group play navigated in a way that we're saving something in the tank for the knockout stages. You know, it's always this stressful push to get through, and it should be in a World Cup, obviously. But my point is when you have the ball in games, you are able to maybe manage the way you navigate a World Cup, and it's a navigation because it's a short tournament. And I think what we see is when we look back at these two tournaments, we see teams that had to expend so much energy in group play that they had nothing, not as much left when they got into the round of 16. Or you would have thought, look, if they had more in the tank in the round of 16, maybe they would have advanced. In the last World Cup, I'd say for a half against Portugal, we kind of dictated the game with the ball. So I think from Bradley to Klinsmann, we haven't seen an improvement in that area, and I think that's what I really am looking for.
Glenn Davis joins us, host of Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5 in Houston. He's also a soccer analyst on the firing of Jurgen Klinsmann earlier this week. And Glenn, I'm going to admit this question comes with a complete, I'm completely naive on the inner workings of how we grow a national team. So I want to ask this. We have this country, we have 300 million people, we have a ton of money, we have smart people. I ask this again, with all respect to what we're building, should we be better in this sport than we are?
Yeah, that's a great question. I'm going to take the point of view that I do think we should. Now, I think that's caveated with and conditioned with, look, you're playing against three traditional sports in this country, right, that are fully ingrained. And you have a youth system here that is unlike any other in the world, and that is, it's a lot of money that changes hands. And there's a lot of money being made in youth sports and at the youth soccer level. And a lot of the decisions when it comes to developing players go out the window because of the dollars. And that's something that, you know, nobody has the answer to. How are you really going to change that? I think in the future, the professional teams in Major League Soccer are going to really have to fully believe that they can begin to develop their own players that are going to play. So in other words, if you're in Houston with a city of 6 million, you got to believe and you got to make the investment in a big way with great coaches that you're going to take young players and move them through to your first team. And there's tremendous benefits if that happens. But we're going to have to take player development seriously. And I think it's difficult in this country because, look, there's so much money being made in youth sports and youth soccer in particular. And soccer's not the only sport. I'm sure it's being made in other sports. But that's the real sort of question that has to be answered. We are producing some very, very good players, but in a country this big, why are we not producing more game changers and guys that can take a game over for you and win it?
I was watching 60 Minutes, and I saw the piece that they did on the women's national team and kind of the money they make compared to the men. I have a daughter who loves the women's national team. She plays soccer. I've taken her to two games. I saw money pouring out of people's pockets to buy things, to buy tickets, to fill out the stadiums. Are the women getting a raw deal when it comes to this, or where's the economics in this?
Yeah, that's a really good question. I mean, there's a lot of things behind the scenes there. The women elected to take a salary, right? So they took a salary, a select number of them, from U.S. soccer, which was in around, I believe, $75,000. Then they got more from their club teams. So I don't know if they're poor. They're the most funded national team in the world when it comes to women's soccer. So I think we have to recognize that and where the sport is growing. And it is growing in a lot of other countries. In fact, I'm out here in Los Angeles calling the Under-20 Women's World Cup. And it's amazing to see how these countries that traditionally have taken on the cultures of the men's side of it and play like the men's team. I mean, it's pretty interesting, you know. It's exciting, too, because they're beginning to invest more. But back to the U.S. and the U.S. women, I don't know. There's two different camps to be in. It's just strictly we deserve to be paid the same as the men, or is it all relative to, you know, the dollars that are coming in? And that's something that, you know, you have to look behind the scenes to. I don't know if I have the answer to that one.
Sure.
I think we have to be realistic. I think it's also a climate where the time is right now to be asking for equal pay. But, you know, what does it ultimately come down to? Does it come down to generated revenue and your piece of the pie when it comes to that? Or does it just come down to the fact that, you know, a female should be paid the same as a male? And listen, I'm friends with a lot of these female players. They're fantastic. I work with all these analysts, you know, the Julie Foudies of the world, the Brandi Chastains and all of them. And they are absolutely wonderful people, and they are fighting for the women's game. And I've got the ultimate respect for them. So where it goes in the future, I don't know, but it is pretty complicated, and they have a collective bargaining agreement right now.
Glenn Davis, that was really fascinating stuff. Thank you so much. I really hope to get you back on again when this topic comes back up again. Really appreciate it. Thank you a lot.
Tony D, thanks for having me on your program.
You got it. Glenn Davis, host of Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5 in Houston. On the firing of Jurgen Klinsmann, which made pretty big news earlier this week, I learned something I did not know. Coming up, NFL value games from the weekend, including the three on Thanksgiving. That's next on SB Nation Radio.
This is SB Nation Radio.
Get all your college football coverage right here on SB Nation Radio.
Davion got some room. He's at the 20, breaking into the open to the 15, the 10, the 5. Can he get to the corner? He does. Touchdown, Michigan.
You can always find us on the go on SBNationRadio.com. Which games will put you to sleep, and which games could be all-time greats? It's time to rate this weekend's NFL games on the Tony D Show.
All right, this is where we go over the games of the weekend and tell you what you should watch and what you shouldn't watch. I think you should watch all the games on Thanksgiving, but we'll still evaluate them anyway. So let's start with Minnesota and Detroit. Hey, this to me at Ford Field is a four-star game because the Lions and the Vikings are both division leaders. I still want to know more about the Lions. They keep playing too close to the vest for me. But I like this one. I think sit back and enjoy, get the turkey ready, get the fixins all ready to go. Enjoy this one because it may have implications in December and January.
I got to put this one at a 5 because I put the Lions in my top 5 NFL teams. So I have to watch this game to make sure that am I an idiot? Like, I'm going to find out on Thanksgiving, I think. So I got to watch this game closely. So it's a 5.
What if this is a dog game? Are you going to change your mind on the Lions when we get back together next week?
If they lose?
Yeah, what if they win, but it's just, you just go, "Oh, this is terrible football. Both teams stink."
Well, it depends. We'll see what everyone else does. Because, like, you got the Broncos in there, and I can't let them touch my top 5 with Trevor Siemian at quarterback.
I know.
We'll see. If the Lions can't start to actually win football games, it might change my mind on them.
My little girl is a Broncos fan. When I told her I put them in my top 5, she gave me a look. Like, oh, no, Dad. I like my team. I don't know if they're that good. Top 5? Ooh, you're crazy. Dallas, Washington. Come on, man. This is a 5-star
yes.
game. This is 9-1, 6-3-1. Redskins playing really good. Dallas has been playing good all year. This is a rematch from week 2. Come on. This is a 5-star game in our league.
Yeah, it's totally a 5-star game. It's going to be a lot of fun to watch. I'm excited for this one.
I can't wait. I really am looking forward to this. I think the Redskins got a really good chance. They're playing good football. But if Kirk Cousins wins this game, what is he going to do? Take Scott McLuhan and wrestle him to the ground? How do you like me now?
He might have to.
WWE style?
He might have to.
I mean, if you get that worked up beating a absolutely defenseless Green Bay Packers team. What are you going to do if you go to Dallas and beat the Cowboys?
Well, because right now he's just seeing green, Tony.
I know.
He's seeing the money come in.
Hey, Scott McLuhan, punch. How do you like me now? Punch. Give me my money. Give me my money. God, this is going to be great. Pittsburgh and Indianapolis. This could have been a 4-star game, but Andrew Luck's not playing. Scott Tolzien, is that who's the backup
yes.
quarterback? Did I get that right?
Yeah, Scott Tolzien, yeah.
God, I don't even, please.
Not good.
This is now maybe a 2.5.
It's a 2. It's not a good one.
It's not good. It stinks because it could have been a nice nightcap to watch Andrew Luck and Big Ben, but
yeah,
those darn concussions just keep getting in the way of our football fun, do they not?
Yep.
Those darn concussions. Coming up on Sunday, the Tennessee Titans on the road at Chicago. Skip this one unless you like Matt Barkley. Is that just getting the start for the Bears?
Yeah.
Matt Barkley. Matt Barkley. He's a darling of USC for a number of years. Too bad. But at least you don't get to see Jay Cutler anymore.
I will say, I got it at a 3 because the Titans, I still don't think the Titans are out of it yet. And
all right, so there's a little value.
And I just want to see the Bears lose and lose and lose and give me that number 2 pick in the draft.
Get that pick in the draft.
So this is a personal 3. I want to see him lose. I don't want to see him win.
I'm looking way ahead to April, so you may not know the answer. Is the draft still in Chicago?
No, it's in Philly this year.
Oh, it's in Philly. Oh, it's right there on the road from my house. I got to go.
Yes. I'm kind of bummed because it's like you're going to have Chicago with the number 2 or 3 pick.
Oh, that would have been great in Chicago. Yes.
Yeah. draft a quarterback. It would have been real cool and exciting. Now Philly doesn't even have a first, I don't think. So,
like, you know, if the Bears had the number two pick, then when Cleveland makes their selection, whoever it is, the fans could chant, "Get off the stage! Get off the stage!"
It'd be great, but now it's in Philly.
Yeah, it'd be great. Now it's in Philly. Jacksonville and Buffalo, two and a half. I'm trying to give them credit.
No.
The Bills are all right. They're 5-5. Jacksonville stinks. They're abysmal. It's not very good. Don't watch this one. Cincinnati at Baltimore. Any value because the Ravens are tied for first place?
Yeah, I give it a 3.
It's like a 3.
And Marvin Lewis, I want to know if he's going to get fired or not.
He's got to get fired. Come on. He can't be that patient in Cincinnati. He haven't done anything since he got there.
But they're so close to being in the playoffs still. They're only two games back at 3-6. If they win this game, there's a better chance he's not getting fired because they'll make the playoffs again potentially.
Yeah. If they squeak in or in it towards the end, it'll be too close. We can't make a change now.
Yeah.
We can't take that leap. You know?
Injuries.
We're on the cusp right there. It's all injuries and, you know. Arizona and Atlanta. I like Atlanta. I really do. And Arizona is the most disappointing team I think we have in the league. Maybe you could make the argument for Green Bay, but this has been a mess for Arizona. They were a Super Bowl-level team during the preseason. They looked like they were going to be one of the top teams in the NFL. They haven't been that way. Atlanta has. This will be at the Georgia Dome. You know what? I think this is still a one-sided affair, though Arizona's defense is still pretty good. This is a 3.5.
I give it a 4 for one reason and one reason alone. Patrick Peterson versus Julio Jones is going to be awesome.
Yeah,
Arizona's
defense is still pretty good. They're only allowing like 18 points a game or something like that. And Atlanta's high-flying, so this might not be as one-sided as we indicate. Giants at Cleveland, that's a 1. Giants should win this one game. Anything that involves Cleveland is pathetic. I read a thing. They had a career fair. Did you see that story?
No.
Brown season ticket sellers had a career fair to lure people to buy a ticket to the career fair, and then you'd get a ticket to the game, and people walked out, and it's just
embarrassing.
Bad. It's just bad. I know. Come to the career fair, maybe get a job and see the Browns game. Ugh, I don't know. Unemployment looks really good right now. Ugh. Los Angeles at New Orleans. The LA Rams average like 14 points per game, and they're starting Jared Goff. If you want to see Jared Goff, I guess this has got some value to it. It's going to be at the Mercedes-Benz Superdome, but high-flying offense against an offense that doesn't do anything, come on, nothing. This is a 1.
Yeah, I mean, I will say like it's a 2, but if Jared Goff doesn't put up numbers, he may never.
Yeah, that's true.
And it's only a second game, but this is the Saints.
The Saints beg you to just score on them.
Yeah.
I mean, they're literally like, here's the end zone. Feel free to come in there and use it and as any way you want. That's totally up, you know, we're not going to do anything. If you want to just run it in there or throw it in there, we're totally cool with that. And if Jared Goff, you're right, if he can't look halfway decent against the Saints, when is he going to look halfway decent? San Francisco at Miami. Ugh. No.
1.
Come on, can we please get a good game on Sunday? What am I doing here?
Yeah, like we started off like a lot of 5s and 4s, and now it's like 1, 2.
Killer
1, 2.
Thursday, 1, 2, maybe a 3. Being generous,
but I think we're getting close here now in the 3 o'clock games.
The Dolphins are pretty good. They're worth a little bit of time, but not that much against the 49ers.
Yeah.
All right, San Diego and Houston. I don't care what San Diego's record is. They're still sneaky tough. The Texans have not lost at home this season. I think this is a better game than it may appear on the record because Phillip Rivers is still a decent enough quarterback. The Texans are good at home. They're still leading their division. This is a 3.5.
Yeah, I get it a 3. I think it's going to be an interesting game, and we'll see what the Texans can do against a kind of a banged-up Chargers defense. So I think it'll be interesting.
Seattle at Tampa Bay. You like the Buccaneers at all in this game and doing anything?
I mean, I gave it a 3.5 just because they're only a game back of the Falcons
right now.
But Seattle's looks so good, I don't think it's going to be that close. So I gave it like a 3.5.
Yeah, Buccaneers do play Seattle well in the past, but that doesn't really matter here. But maybe 3.5. Carolina and Oakland. All right. Look, hear me out on this. I think this is still a good game. I think this is a good game. I don't like Carolina's record, but I still think Cam Newton's fun. But Oakland is still one of those teams that, man, that defense is just porous enough that this could be interesting, and they mean to pull it out late again. This might be fun.
I've seen the Falcons collapse before. I give this game a 4 because I don't think the Panthers are out of it yet. Call me crazy.
I know.
So I give it a 4, and I still want to see Oakland. They didn't look good, and they beat the Texans. They need to start being more consistent. They stop with the penalties, but I give this one a 4.
All right, New England at the Jets. Too bad. The Jets start Ryan Fitzpatrick. This is a 2. Jets should roll over them and then should roll over them again just to make sure they rolled over them the first time. That's the way the Patriots should handle
this. Yeah,
it's a 2. No, Kansas City at Denver. 5-star game right here. Both 7-3 looking up at Oakland. Winner of this could take a lead in the division, could tie for the lead in the division. Might actually take a lead based on some weird tiebreaker. I don't know. Then Monday, Green Bay at Philadelphia. What do you make of this?
Two
is right. Philadelphia on Monday Night Football against a Packers team that can't stop anybody. So good games on Thursday. Maybe not so much on Sunday, except there's a few gems in there. Coming up next, Jordan Bianchi, and we'll put a finishing bow on the NASCAR season. That's next on SB Nation Radio.
This is SB Nation Radio.
SB Nation Radio is your home for the best NFL coverage.
For the Cowboys, 2nd and 8 at the Raven 13 blitz. Look, here they come. Prescott slant, there's 5 to the goal line. Touchdown!
You can always find us on the go on SBNationRadio.com.
Think you're...
This is the Tony D Show on SB Nation Radio. Here's your host, Tony Desiri.
All right, glad you can be with us here on SB Nation Radio. Again, happy Thanksgiving to you as we get ready for the nice holiday weekend. We're going to put a finishing bow on the NASCAR season. Jordan Bianchi joins us from SB Nation as Jimmy Johnson won his 7th title. How are you, Jordan?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me on.
All right, let's start with Jimmy Johnson because his 7 ties him with Richard Petty and Dale Earnhardt Sr. And, sometimes when you win titles and you get put in these comparisons, sometimes people go, yeah, but. Is there any yeah, but with Jimmy Johnson? Will he go down 20, 30 years from now in the same category as those two guys?
Absolutely. With perspective, he's actually probably going to go down better than those guys. You look at the whole scenario, the way he won this championship and the competition he goes against. Earnhardt and Petty didn't have to go against this level of competition. There wasn't 20 guys in each race that could win the race and theoretically could win the championship. Johnson has to defeat those guys every given week. And you also have to look at the fact that this championship format that NASCAR instituted in 2004 really levels the playing field and resets everything after, for the final 10 races of the season. Petty and Earnhardt didn't have to do that. They could build themselves point leads and really almost, theoretically coast for the rest of the way. That isn't the case with Johnson. So I think actually with perspective, it's going to look better than it does now, where he's already lumped into the same class as those two guys. Years down the road, Johnson's probably going to exceed those guys, and people are really going to appreciate his accomplishments.
Could I make the argument, though, that the image of, outside of the wins, the image of those two guys, does Jimmy Johnson fit in that category? Meaning, there was a time where Richard Petty was the race car driver, and Dale Earnhardt Sr. was the race car driver. Does Jimmy Johnson fit that image of being the guy that immediately identifies the sport?
No, absolutely not. Those are the two most iconic drivers in NASCAR history, and really all of motorsports, if you really want to think about it. AJ Foyt, sure. Mario Andretti probably as well. You got the Intimidator and you got the King. The number 43 and the number 3 car. Jimmy Johnson doesn't have that. I was thinking about this the other day. We really don't have a nickname for Jimmy Johnson. People call him 6-time because he won six championships, but he doesn't have that nickname. He doesn't have that crossover appeal. He's not iconic in that sense. Maybe down the road, as this legacy really starts to take shape, it'll come, but absolutely not. And I would say he's probably far down that list because you have to start thinking about Jeff Gordon as well. So in terms of that, looking at it from that perspective, absolutely not. But if you look at his totality, his career as a whole, it's absolutely probably exceeds those guys.
All right, let's get back. Let's get to the chase. We've had a number of years under this new format now. Are people warming up to it? Is it something that's now kind of cool? How do people still view the way they determine a champion?
Well, it definitely split. I think there's definitely some people, some longtime fans of the sport who are not happy with this. They see it as a gimmick, and I think all playoffs are gimmicks in a sense, in that you have to get hot at a certain time of the year, and you don't have to be consistent from the beginning of the season to the end. And some fans don't like that. They saw how Earnhardt won their titles. They saw how Gordon won his titles, or Petty, and they like that. That's just how they follow motorsports. That's what they're used to. And then there's other fans who are new to the sport, I would say, and appreciate the fact that, you know what, this is exciting. They have a must-win situation that NASCAR's created now at the end of the year where you have to be great and you have to go out and basically win the final race of the year. That wasn't the case before. Now the championship is guaranteed to come down to that last race and really the last lap in a lot of instances, and that wasn't the situation. So I think the newer fans of the sport appreciate it and like it, and I think the diehards of the sport who've been around for a long time and watched NASCAR growing up as kids, they're probably a little dismayed right now.
I have to ask you a question about the Homestead track, the market, and NASCAR's, you know, ending their season there. Could NASCAR have a Super Bowl-like scenario where at the beginning of the season they say, here's our schedule, and the last race of the year is going to be at Talladega or Phoenix, or instead of always at Homestead, or is there a relationship there, or does that market work for that particular moment? Because that seems like if you buy a ticket for that, you're buying one of the best tickets of the year.
There's certainly a way to do it. It would be challenging, though, because, you know, NASCAR is a sport where a lot of fans travel to, you know, various from other markets to watch this race. And you have to give them opportunity to, you know, allow them to set up their schedule and buy tickets and coordinate travel plans. If you wanted to do it, you know, you could do it a year or two out. That's possible. Another thing you have to consider, too, much like the Super Bowl, NASCAR, you know, middle of November, you're kind of limited on the tracks you can go to. You know, Bristol and Martinsville would be fantastic. Bristol and Martinsville are fantastic places to have a season finale. I mean, short track racing, that would be great. But no one wants to go to Virginia and northern Tennessee in mid-November. So South Florida is a good market for them. They've had sellouts there the last couple of years. You know, obviously, it's always a tough climate and trying to get attention against the Dolphins and everything else going at that time of the year. NASCAR's done a good job, though. Weather-wise, track-wise, it's one of the best facilities in the circuit. It really lends itself to great racing. And yes, there's other places they could look at, but in the end, I think they've done a really nice job of building this race as a special weekend.
Tony Stewart retired at the end of this season. How will history remember Tony Stewart? He's been controversial, but he's been a heck of a race car driver. How will history remember him?
As one of the great drivers of all time and one of the most controversial drivers of all time, and that sometimes his antics away from the car, outside of his success, overshadowed the victories and everything else he accomplished. Great driver, done a lot for this sport, but you can't ignore the fact that he's been involved in a lot of different incidents, some of his doing, some of not of his own doing. It's one of the more interesting careers, but it really fits the man because Tony is a complex person. He's not a driver. He's not really a person where you can say black or white, he's this. He is a very interesting man, and his career as a whole, I think if you look at it, he had a tremendous impact on this sport. He took over for Jeff Gordon in the sense that Gordon was the first driver to come down from open wheel racing in Indiana and make an impact. Well, Stewart was that next driver, and if he would have failed, it really would have shut the door for those other guys that came along. He didn't fail. He had a lot of success. So as much as Gordon gets a lot of credit for all this, Stewart should as well. But again, you just can't ignore the other things that went on with Stewart's career, good and bad, and I think that's ultimately his legacy.
I try not to ask two-part questions, but I feel like I have to do this with this next topic because I want to go little picture and then big picture. Dale Earnhardt Jr., he suffered the concussion. He stopped racing. There's a lot of talk about where his career is going. Let's talk about – I want you to talk about him first and basically where he goes from here. And then big picture, what did Dale Earnhardt Jr.'s concussion situation do for NASCAR as a whole under that topic?
Well, I think what Dale Earnhardt Jr. goes from here is the fact that he wants to race next year. He's going to be back, he says, and it sounds like he's going to be cleared medically sometime in the next few weeks. His team owner, Rick Hendrick, talked to reporters. We spoke with him this past weekend, and he looks like he's on track, and that's a great thing. Beyond 2017, we don't know. Earnhardt has said he wants to come back and see where he's at. I mean, he's a free agent. His contract is up with Hendrick Motorsports. He has kind of hinted the fact that, you know, with everything going on health-wise, this may or may not be his last season. So you really have to be open to the possibility that next year might be it for Earnhardt. Looking at his impact on concussions, and I think ultimately that's where his legacy as a driver is, because NASCAR, let's be honest, has a, you know, like most sports, had issues with the concussions. They didn't necessarily work up front in addressing them. Earnhardt, 4 years ago in 2012, removed himself from the car because he had a concussion that went undiagnosed. That's huge. You don't see drivers, especially drivers of that level, pulled themselves out of a race car, and he did it. And he did it again this year. And NASCAR has responded by, you know, strengthening their concussion protocol situation. They now have drivers, if they have symptoms or they think there might be symptoms there, they pull them out of the race car and make them sit out a race. That wasn't the case before, and I think ultimately you can trace that back to Earnhardt, because before, when drivers, you know, the creed of drivers was you race hurt. You know, Richard Petty raced with a broken neck. Dale Earnhardt Sr. raced with a broken shoulder. That was just how NASCAR drivers were. You had to be tough. Well, you know, Earnhardt showed that there's a different kind of toughness, and that toughness is saying, you know what, I'm not fit to be behind the wheel and risk my life and others as well.
All right, Jordan Bianchi. Oh, quick question, 30 seconds. Give me the grade for the season, a letter grade for the overall season.
B-. There was a lot of positives, a lot of young emerging stars in the sport. NASCAR still has some things they need to work on. I like the direction of the sport. I'd like to see a little bit more done, though. And the leadership, I go back and forth on this. Sometimes I'm really happy with the NASCAR's leadership, and I like where it's going. And other times I wish they'd be a little bit more hands-on and a little bit more direct.
My friend, thank you so much. A great, great insight into the sport as it wrapped up its season. Appreciate your time, my friend.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
You got it. Happy Thanksgiving to you as well. Jordan Bianchi, SB Nation on NASCAR as Jimmy Johnson wins the title. I know we don't talk a lot of NASCAR on this show, but that's how I got my start in this business. But, you know, when the season is all over, and I think there were a couple of issues, you know, to talk about. One was the situation with the concussion for Dale Earnhardt Jr. We're talking about one of the iconic names in sports, in that sport, and him saying, I'm done. I'm not going to race this year. I need to go check this out. And saying publicly a number of times, I am in my 40s. I want to have kids. I want to have a family. I don't want to be in a dark room in my 50s. I don't want to have this come back. Step in the right direction for him, because 20 years ago, 15 years ago, maybe 10 years ago, he wouldn't have done that at all. All right, coming up, we'll put a wrap up on this hour as we get you set for Prime Cut here on SB Nation Radio.
John Salisbury here. Make your way to Houston for that really big football game in February. You probably heard of it. Join us for the big Texas party on February 2nd. You'll meet VIP, celebrity athletes, and enjoy great beer, delicious barbecue, and smooth bourbon. Get $75 off your ticket at thebigtexasparty.com. Celebrate the big game with us at SB Nation Radio.
This is the Tony D Show on SB Nation Radio. Here's your host, Tony DeZiri.
I'm still deciding what should I get for going to the Macy's Thanksgiving Day Parade tomorrow? What should I ask for in return down the road? A golf weekend? I don't know. I got to get up now at the crack of dawn, take the family down to the parade in New York City. First time I've ever done this. When we lived in Nashville, there was no Thanksgiving Day Parade to go to. I got to wake up, settle in, watch it on TV, enjoy football, have friends and family come over, give them the Charlie Brown Thanksgiving dinner that I was going to serve with the jelly beans, pretzel sticks, popcorn, and toast. Now I got to get up and head to New York City to watch the floats and the musicals perform in front of me.
I think it's got to be a long weekend of golf.
I think so too, right?
Paired with the NFL draft in Philadelphia.
That might work. Go down to the draft, cover the draft. And then maybe a combo head down to Myrtle Beach or something for a long weekend.
Yeah.
Myrtle Beach sounds like a great weekend. I could go do that. I could do that, right?
Yeah, I think that's what you're going to have to do.
My biggest thing is that what if she forgets? What if I remind her and she goes, but you loved it. You had a good time. You ain't going down to Myrtle Beach. Stop dreaming. Get over here and help me rake.
See, if you do have fun,
Then there's no currency, right? I can't parlay that in anything.
Yeah.
Yeah, I probably
now. The only thing, if you have fun, the only thing you could use it as is if you ever make her wake up early to do something,
right? Like drive me to the golf course.
Yes.
No, I can't. See, look, listen to me. You know what? You're a young man building up your life, and you're listening to me giving you like, you know, I'm just a pure example of good marriage. Here I am. My wife is dying to go to this parade, and I'm looking for what I can get in return by going with her to the parade.
Yeah.
Instead of, my wife wants to go to the parade, well, I'm going to make sure I go with her because I love and care for my life partner. No. I'm looking at it like, ooh, golf, maybe in the spring, maybe a long weekend in North Carolina. This is going to be good.
Or just use it as currency for, like, I don't know, like if your kid has to go do something really early in the morning, be like, well, I went to the parade.
I went to the parade. I took you to the parade.
Yeah, and that was fun. I don't really want to take my son to a doctor appointment at six in the morning.
The one thing I can't do tomorrow is I can't complain. Like, she's really into this, so I can't whine like an adult baby. Like, yeah. I can't stand watching the parade. I'm cold!
Hold on, let me ask you a question. Is she a Harry Potter fan?
No.
So maybe this is currency for her.
Yeah. Making her go through all that stuff at Universal on vacation.
Yeah, so maybe you've already lost.
Lord knows. Lord knows she could come with me about 50 examples of her going to sports stuff for me over the years. She could go, yeah, remember all those years you took me to UNLV basketball and I didn't even care about them? And yeah. Early in our marriage when things were, you know, things were new and fresh. This is going to be rich. This is going to be fun. She's really excited. Like I said, she didn't even ask. She's like, we're going. We are heading to the parade. All right, so I asked you, I gave you a little homework.
Yes.
I want you to give me the examples of things you're thankful for this holiday season, the sports memories you're thankful for that don't involve any of your teams, the ones where you say, man, I wasn't rooting either way, but I'm really glad I saw that.
The one I came up with was involving my dad and my friend Troy Hudson, who played in the NBA. And
yeah, okay.
I didn't really know Troy. I remember when I was younger, when my dad was his high school teacher in Carbondale, Illinois. But I do really remember in the 2003 playoffs, in the Western Conference playoffs, when he went toe-to-toe with the Lakers and dropped 37 points in one game, and the game went six. It went six games. And I just remember my dad thinking that was the coolest thing. And that was kind of my first introduction to basketball as a whole, of like rooting for someone or something that wasn't the Chicago Bulls. So I think
that's kind of cool.
I think it's that. I think it's that is would be my number one thing, I think.
All right. My number one thing for a team I root for is actually kind of a bittersweet memory, but I'm actually thankful I had it, was the Christian Laettner shot against Kentucky.
Okay.
Because I had two hockey tickets to Hartford Blackhawks. I actually grew up as a Blackhawks fan, and I wanted to go see this game, and Bruins tickets are really hard to get, so I bought two tickets for a friend of mine, and I'd go to Hartford to see the Blackhawks play the Hartford Whalers. My friend couldn't make it at the last minute, and my father decided, all right, I'll go with you. He's not a huge hockey fan. But my brother went to the University of Kentucky, and we were watching the game, and it was kind of a game where we were kind of keeping an eye on both things because it was on in the concourse. And as we were watching the hockey game, a guy came out and said, "Duke, Kentucky, overtime." And everybody went to the concourse.
Yeah.
Like the arena emptied to go to the concourse to watch it. And I remember my father and I just kind of watching it together. And even though Leitner's shot, it was kind of heartbreaking because my brother went to Kentucky. I thought it was one of the most incredible things I'd ever seen ever in college basketball. Like just
oh yeah for sure
that play was and when I watch it every March Madness I'm it's been 20 years and I'm still blown away 20 plus years I'm still blown away they made that shot I'm still blown away I still watch it amazed that Leitner was calm and collected because if I had gotten that ball on that inbound I would have flung it up as quickly as it hit my hands in a nervous wreck and he was calm enough to turn and shoot. The one that I laugh at, the one thankful memory that I have that every time I see it, I laugh and laugh and laugh, was the kick six, Auburn against Alabama a couple years ago.
Yeah.
Because all my Alabama friends are obnoxious as Hades. I mean, unreal. Obnoxious on another level. And to watch Chris Davis get that and return it for a touchdown to watch the national championship SEC title game, Iron Bowl melt away from Alabama. That was pretty rich, man. That was pretty rich.
Yeah, that's a great one. It's funny. That was almost my my first one because I used to not really watch college football either besides Notre Dame, and that kind of sparked my intrigue to start watching more than just Notre Dame.
Sure.
Mine is not just because it's the anniversary. It does help a little bit influence me. Today is the anniversary of the Mark Sanchez butt fumble.
Oh, that's wonderful.
Arguably one of the best moments in sports history, I think.
Yes, absolutely.
I mean,
it keeps coming back.
Yes, it's funny. It will never die. I mean, every year on the anniversary till we are old, people will be talking about the butt fumble.
He was so good early in his career. This is how he's remembered. It's the gift that keeps on giving. I could watch it a million times, the butt fumble.
And I get to go talk to a Jets fan after this and remind him of it, so it makes it even better.
Brian Barrett's in for Steve Buhnen, Sean Salisbury, and Prime Cut coming your way next. Have a great Thanksgiving. We're off for the next 2 days. Thank you for joining us here on SB Nation Radio. Be safe this holiday season.